On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we're going to get Olympic before the closing ceremonies commence. In a couple days, we'll be talking about whether Major League Baseball should allow its players to participate in the 2028 games. We will say goodbye to White Sox manager, former White Sox manager, Pedro Grifol, and of course, give you the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's Friday. Hello. And welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that believes podcasting should be an Olympic sport. I'm Jake Mintz, and that's Jordan Schusterman. Put us in the winter games, baby, though, because we're cold.
I think what would be interesting about Olympic podcasting would be you could kind of have it like track and field, where you have like different distances, different times. And, you know, we would like, I feel like, would we have our best chance to compete in the under 1 hour category, or should we stretch out our content and compete in more of the long distance? Because I could see an argument for both.
We can't compete with hardcore history, Jordan. That's like a 4 hour show. That's the marathon of Olympic podcasting. On this episode, we will be doing quite a bit of Olympics chatter. No, we won't be digging deep into the pole vault. Shouts out though to Mondo Duplantis, the Swedish jumping bean, whose older brother, Antoine, is indeed the all-time hits leader at LSU and was a draft pick, I believe, the seventh round by the New York Mets. Played a couple years in the minor leagues. Friend of the show. Unbelievable. Mondo is the GOAT, baby.
Yeah, the Duplantis fam is really something to behold. I'm sure you heard the broadcast kind of talk about it a lot more. Although it's funny, because when they refer to it, they're like, you know, they all go, all his whole family went into sport, but Mondo is the greatest of them all. And it's like, yeah, no, it's true. But Antoine, man, that dude could hit. he is truly one of the best college hitters of the 21st century. I know he, you know, didn't make it past Double A with the Mets, but awesome guy. And as someone who got to know Antoine a little bit, just like hearing about Mondo literally, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when it was really starting to take off. I mean, to see him have that, he's already been smashing world records for the last however many years. Yeah. But this felt like the moment where everyone really knew about it. And that was very cool.
The best part about it is that the entire high jump competition just devolved into, let's see how high this guy can go. Like, there was no competition for the gold. Everyone competing knew that they weren't going to win. And that's just so foreign to us. And just for a million reasons.
Antoine got some screen time. So shouts out to Duplantis. Yeah. But no, we're going to talk about baseball and the Olympics. Of course, we've got the good, the bad, the ugly later. Yes, Pedro Grifol is no longer managing the White Sox. Lucky him, I guess, question mark. and we're going to talk a little bit more about baseball at the racetrack. But Jake, let's start with the Olympics, because we had some quality hoops yesterday. The semifinal game, we had France and Germany earlier in the afternoon, and then USA versus Serbia. I'm going to take any time, you know, basketball crosses over into us talking about it on the podcast. I'd like to just do my general, oh my God, LeBron James. All right, let's just put that out there. His beard is notably more gray than it was even last NBA season. and that's because he's just like playing point guard and doing all these things. LeBron is amazing. But obviously, we, as anyone who watches baseball, are like, oh man, that could be us. Wouldn't that be so cool? And with baseball returning to the Olympics in 2028, we did have it 4 years ago, or I guess 3 years ago in Tokyo, in Los Angeles. We are now just thinking about what this could be like. And you have put a lot of thought into this, have started to kind of ask around the game. And obviously, it's a long way away. But because it is in all likelihood, if some version of this is going to happen for us involving Major League players, it is going to start to have to be figured out well in advance. I think it is really never too early to start talking about this.
Let me actually begin yesterday. You mentioned the basketball game. I had that up on one screen, and then the extra innings of Nationals Giants matinee on the other.
Oof.
And it's like, is this the plan every 4 years? Like, are we really going to try and go up as a sport against that with this? Now, I know it's a more complicated conversation than that.
Well, and shouts out to the Giants. Drawing, like,
I understand.
Is gonna
I
be
understand.
The number one I, yes. You want to be a part of it. You want
to
be a part of it.
That's the thing. To see basketball, get a piece of that action, and selfishly, the sport that we love is just sitting on the sidelines being like, That's very nice. Like, I think we can dream bigger. So I think it's actually important to start to with the history of baseball in the Olympics, right? So obviously we don't have it in Paris right now, but believe it or not, the first time baseball ever showed up in the Olympics was in Paris in 1900 as an exhibition sport, okay? Couple American teams went over there and did a little ball playing just to show off what this game was all about. It was an exhibition sport various times over the 20th century, showed up in Berlin, of all places. They had Pesapallo in Sweden, which is baseball adjacent. They then had it in the Mexico City Games in 1964. But it really starts the game steam in 1984 and 1988, in LA in 84, and in Seoul in 88. It was just like kind of like a tournament going on with international teams at the time during the Olympics. It wasn't an official Olympic tournament. Bobby Witt Sr. played on the 1984 team. I was asking him a little bit about it yesterday, just like what that experience was like. It was all college players. But the first time baseball was really in the Olympics was in 1992 in Barcelona. And the reason it was added is just because the sport had gotten international enough by that point that having this type of enormous international tournament made sense. If you had an international baseball tournament in 1955 or whatever the heck, like, the U.S. would have crumbled everybody else, even more than, you know, in theory, what you would imagine it right. to be now, sure. right? Like, yeah. in theory. Mm-hmm. So in 1992, baseball in the Olympics of Barcelona. Hilarious place for them to start doing it, but that's where it began. Amateurs only, okay? So that meant college players represented the United States, non-professionals from the other countries. Cuba had a bit of a loophole where they said their top players in the domestic league were amateurs because they held other jobs. So they got to send all their big boys, and they absolutely ran the table. They won the gold medal in 92. They did the same thing again in 96. 2000 in Sydney, Australia, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, allows for professional baseball players to join. That means the U.S. team and a lot of the other international teams can send minor league baseball players. That evens out the field. That 2000 team in the U.S. team in 2000 wins the gold medal. That's like Roy Oswalt is on that team. I believe
before
like Ben
Sheets. But this is like as prospects, correct?
Yes. They're like prospects and like kind of older veteran minor leaguers. There's no
big
leaguers.
Which is what we had 4 years ago, but I'm jumping ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's the state of play in 2004 in Athens. The U.S. does not even make that tournament in Athens, which is super wonky. All right. There was a single elimination qualifying tournament that they didn't win. And so like the Olympic baseball tournament had Greece and Italy and the Netherlands in it, but not America. A year after that, the IOC announces that baseball and softball too are cut from the official Olympic program. There's another tournament in 08 because it all kind of works on a tape delay. But for 2012 in London, no baseball. 2016 in Rio, no baseball. Now there is baseball in 2020. 2021 in Tokyo, host countries are allowed to nominate sports that have particular interest within the host nation as one-offs. And baseball was added to the situation in Tokyo because, you know, Japan. Same thing is very likely to happen for LA in 2028. So if there is going to be a baseball tournament, the question then becomes, should big leaguers participate? One last point. I think before we dive into the future, I think it's worth understanding why it was cut in 2005, mm-hmm. right? Why did the IOC believe that this was no longer worth it? Now, in doing research, I think there's three main reasons. One, underrated, is steroids.
Well, steroids, are steroids underrated or overrated? But yeah, I get what you're saying. Yes, that is the wrong time to be introducing or stumping for a sport that clearly had an issue, even if at that point, in theory, they're starting to try to get it under control. It was not exactly the sport to be feeling awesome about from a cleanliness perspective.
We're 2 years away from the Mitchell report, mm-hmm. right? Still.
Yeah.
And yeah. So it is the dominant story in baseball. It has stained the sport, especially on an international level. And for the Olympics, who were at the time were trying to just clean everything up as much as possible, they made the argument that baseball's doping protocol is not good enough, is not as good as ours. Now, you can roll your eyes at that. You know, there were people doped out of their minds running track at the Olympics, I understand. But that was an argument that was made. The second one, in my opinion, is just the amount of money it takes to put on this type of baseball tournament. There aren't facilities in a lot of countries that you're traveling to, right? So I believe London would have needed an upgrade. Rio would have needed an upgrade in 16. They had to make upgrades in China in 08 and in Athens in 04. These are not countries with like an enormous baseball history. And then if you have six teams, that's so many people. That's a lot of gold and silver and bronze that you got to melt down into a circle, right? And
let alone, you know, have them there, host them, not just the games, right? You're adding so many more just humans. Yep.
Right. It's not the same as a sport, maybe like, you know, that doesn't do numbers like archery.
Well, right. I mean, there's just
bringing 30 people.
Yeah. You're bringing two
per country.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
And staff. And then the third reason is that it was not the best players in the world. And Jacques Rogge, the Belgian bigwig who was in charge of the IOC at the time, flat out said that. He was like, baseball is not sending its best athletes to the Olympics. And so there's not enough interest in them. And he was 100% right. And it's cyclical, right? It's if they're not sending the best athletes, no one's going to watch and no one's going to care. And if no one cares, why would they send the best athletes? And so we ended up with a situation where baseball wasn't moving the needle and they cut it. In 2021, they did not pause the season again, for a number of reasons. But even if COVID hadn't happened, they were not planning to pause the season. It's worth noting. Also worth noting that other countries do pause their seasons. The NPB in Japan does. The KBO does. And so if you go look at the rosters from 2021, you will recognize quite a few names on the Japanese team because it is guys like Seiya Suzuki and Masataka Yoshida and Shota Imanaga and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, players who have come over and been stars or good players here in the States. They were obviously huge stars over in Japan. So they paused the season. And that's a big reason why Japanese team wins in 2021. The US team is like a bunch of top prospects and like the husk of Todd Frazier and
David like quad Robertson. A guys, right. It's like the like useful depth hitters. And then a bunch of, Scott Kazmir, right? Like you got like these old pitchers and then a couple, Joe Ryan is maybe one that kind of stands out as like kind of an ascendant young pitcher. But they still get silver, right? I mean, obviously there was only six teams and it was a condensed tournament. But, there was still a version of them that succeeded. However, it was still a very, and Julio was the big one that played for the Dominican, which was a very rare situation where the Mariners were cool with their top prospect, flying across the globe in the middle of the season. But that was a pretty extreme case, right? Like in general, if you kept those guidelines in play, as we kind of spin this forward, you would still have a competitive team because the talent in the U.S. is so great. And especially if you can include, minor league prospects. However, it would not be something that would be obviously not just our best foot forward, but also something that would really compel people to watch in a meaningful way, with all due respect to these people that did compete in 2021.
The U.S. team won the silver in 2021, and they won the silver at the 2023 WBC. What did people care more about? The latter, because the players move the needle. That's the thing. The stars bring the eyeballs, and really the notion that this is the best the world has to offer. When you're watching the Olympics, even if it's a sport I don't know, like I'm like, this person is the freaking third best in the world at running 110 meters and jumping over hurdles. And that compels me to give a crap, right? Whereas if I'm watching baseball and it's like, oh, that guy's the seventh best prospect in the Brewer system, like that's not doing it for me. Even like in the NBA, this is the thing now where it's like, dude, people are watching because it's LeBron and KD and Steph Curry going up against Jokic. Like they wouldn't be watching if it was the C team. And I think this was a problem for the NHL in a couple of recent, this is also worth folding in the conversation. NHL did not have pros for a long time. 1980, Miracle on Ice, that's why that happens, right? Pros start coming, I believe, in the mid 90s. That heightens everything. I remember like when we were growing up, those USA Canada hockey games, NHL guys were unbelievable. Yeah. NHL paused the season. They stopped pausing the season, I believe, in 2018 and 2022. They're going to then resume and let NHL guys do it moving forward, right? So there's precedent for pausing the season and letting players play within a major American sport.
Yes. However, the logistics for our sport are certainly challenging. So now as we kind of look ahead, what is, and you know, Manfred has been asked about this. He was asked about this All-Star game. You know, we were at that press conference and listening to him talk about it. I actually want to pull up the exact Manfred quote, but I want you to kind of start talking about what we're, how, what the, where we're at right now. Obviously it's still 4 years out, and how you're kind of feeling the temperature on this thing. Cause I think Manfred's quote was actually interesting on this, but I want to pull it up.
There's an opportunity here. That's the big thing. Having the Olympics be in LA in 2028, first stateside summer games since 1996 in Atlanta, first in a generation. You and I don't remember 96, right? This is an opportunity for baseball to be on the international stage with its best players, in part because the interest will be there from the fans, and in part because the potential logistical lift is so much smaller. Asking players and the league to pause the season and send everyone to Japan is different than Los Angeles, right? And the facilities are already there. You can do all the games at Dodger Stadium or Angel Stadium. Heck, you could do them at UCLA. You know what I mean? If some of the smaller countries, if you really needed to. Go out to Rancho Cucamonga if you have to, right? Like, the fields exist and are there. And so
send Roki Sasaki to Inland Empire, and which before he, you know, comes over here. Anyway, yes. At so, that point, he'll be in the big leagues probably. So
yeah, the logistical lift is just so much smaller. And it presents this really wonderful opportunity where you would need to take off less time in the middle of the season, of the MLB season, to make something like this work.
So the chairman of this is the chairman of like just all like all the Olympics in Los Angeles in 2028. Is that accurate?
Is correct.
Yes. So tell me about who Casey Wasserman is, because I think that's not necessarily a name that everyone is super familiar with.
So if you've ever been to Westwood in California, there is a tall building with a big fat W on it. And that is the headquarters of Wasserman Sports Agency, one of the bigger agencies in the country. Wasserman represents a ton of big leaguers, right? I mean, I can't think of some off the top of my head, but
yeah, it's one of them. They got a bunch.
They got a ton of guys. And the head of that is Casey Wasserman. And Casey Wasserman is also the head of like LA 2028, which is the organization helping to put the Olympics on from the local side of things. He made a proposal to Rob Manfred, and I believe a bunch of owners at some point this past offseason, as to why baseball should be included in the 2028 games. And I think it would have been easy and understandable for Manfred to like shoot that down immediately, and very Manfredian to do so, to say, this is unrealistic, we're not going to do this. However, Rob Manfred, for all of his faults, has been a good advocate for baseball on the international stage. They have done a lot of good things with the WBC. We saw that example in 2023, how big it was. And I think Rob Manfred, if he could, would do this for the Olympics. Rob Manfred does not get to choose on his own. He needs to get approval from one, the Players Association, and two, all 30 owners, because the owners are likely going to lose money and or assume a level of risk by sending their players to a midseason tournament.
Yes. Now, but before we get to that, which is certainly a big part of this, and we can't, as much as we all want to see it, we can't pretend like that doesn't exist. I do think that what Manfred said was interesting. He said, quote, I sat with Casey last week. We're talking about what can be done, what exactly would it look like, what are the compromises we would have to make in terms of our season. I remain open-minded on that topic. And then he continues, is kind of the point that you were getting at earlier. Manfred said, quote, I do think that maybe the thing that I found most persuasive that Casey is saying is forget about what's going on to happen with baseball in the Olympics long term, because I think we all know when you're in Paris, they're probably not going to build a baseball stadium. When you're in LA, you focus on LA. It is an opportunity we need to think about, right? So this is he's here. This is a chance to make something happen in this very unique time and space. And it is an opportunity that we need to think about. And I do think that he will be very clear. Now, Tony Clark also spoke that same day. He also said, like, yes, feedback we've got from some players is there's interest in participating if given an opportunity. But he also knows that this will be, like everything between the league and the players, a negotiation. And that is something that maybe unfortunately is not the right word, but like that's going to be part of this, no matter how much we all want to see it. We all have to recognize that this is going to be a very complicated thing to execute. And so now we can kind of get into what that would possibly mean.
Let me just one more thing here. So the Olympics are going to be in Brisbane in 2032. And then the finalists for 2036 Summer Games are Indonesia, or not, sorry, not the finalists, but the confirmed bids, I believe, are Indonesia, India, Chile, and Istanbul, Turkey. Right? Not exactly ball crazy countries. So
not
the idea
yet.
That
hey, not by 2036, if we keep doing our job, Jake Mintz, they're going to be locked in down there and Chile are over in, oh my gosh.
Santiago.
Yeah, Santiago is going to be. We better get those listeners. If you're listening to us in Chile, let us know. Let us know if you would like to have baseball in the Olympics in 2036.
Yeah, all zero of our Chilean listeners.
Come on. We hear from people in interesting places. Give ourselves a chance here.
So this would in some ways be a one-off. And if I think that's okay, right? This is a unique opportunity. And if you want to say, if I was MLB, I would say to the Olympic Committee, whenever the Summer Games are in a country that likes baseball enough to make this work, and that's really like Japan, South Korea, Mexico, the United States, Canada. It's hard to envision an Olympics being in the DR or Venezuela for a multitude of reasons in the next 25 years. Then in those situations, baseball should be around, sure. And we should have big leaguers participating, right?
Right.
Now let's talk about what some of the impediments are, if that's okay.
Sure.
The big one is injuries.
Right?
Edwin Diaz's leg exploding in Miami during the WBC. Because we had Ohtani Trout at the end of it, did not overshadow the entire competition, but boy, did it threaten to. I mean, that was one of the enduring memories of that tournament, for better or worse. Every Mets fan in the world hates every international baseball game now. I'm obviously kidding. But it is a reminder that there's real risk, right? Yes, Edwin Diaz could have done the same thing like walking down a flight of stairs. I get it. But when you are sending players to participate, Drew Smiley blew out during the WBC one year. There's real risk here, right?
And though for reminding me that risk, one, yeah.
The likelihood of injury, in my opinion, would be lower in a mid-season July tournament than it is in March when guys are still ramping their bodies up.
Right.
I think the potential impact of any injury is much larger, right? So
yeah.
If Bobby Witt Jr. tweaks a hammy playing against Belarus, I mean, that's not going to happen, in LA and misses all of August for a competing Royals team, that's a much bigger deal than if he misses all of April, right?
Yeah.
That's obvious. That being said, I do think pitchers would be more likely to participate in this because they are already built up versus spring training.
Sure. But again, and it's not that what you're saying is irrelevant. And by the way, Belarus baseball. You hear Jake doubting that you're going to qualify for the 2020 Olympics?
Jordan.
Just give yourself a chance. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a particularly bad example for me because I believe Belarus is on the not allowed to have a flag list with Russia. I think they're like the vague,
again,
generic, create a player.
Another impediment to not qualify. That's fine. I'm just saying, you know, don't crush those dreams. Okay. Anyway, to your point. What you're saying about like, oh, well, the risk is higher and the impact is greater, risk is lower, whatever. That's all true. Ultimately, it's really as simple about just the optics and the very simple fact of the owners of these teams and the front offices are, we're paying these players to play for us, and to suddenly them having them do anything, any sort of strenuous activity, not for us, that is a risk in and of itself, or at least something that will be challenging. Now, obviously, there's going to be part of that anybody is going to have to get over for any of this. And I could be wrong about this, but this is something, because it's so normalized in basketball, as we turn it back to that, I don't hear anybody talking. I don't hear NBA front office people talking about how terrified they are for these things. And there have been injuries in Olympic basketball that have impacted the NBA season at some level, but it's not a talking point because it's so normalized. However, as we are trying to introduce something differently, especially if it involves stopping the major league season, It is. I just think it is that simple. It is that the owners say, well, this is, we're not paying them to, you know, I'm not paying Max Kepler to play for Germany. I'm playing him to play for the Twins. So there's so many versions of that. And that is very, very simple, right? I know we could say, oh, get over it, whatever. This is for the growth of the game. And that is the equation that we're talking about. That is the decision that everyone is going to have to get over, but it is the most basic one to start with. But I honestly think that I do not think that is the number one thing at all. It is the easiest thing to first think about because of Evan Diaz, whatever. I do not think that is the number one reason why this is going to be a challenge.
One of the biggest reasons that the NHL stopped participating, I believe, is that the IOC, like the International Olympic Committee and the International Hockey Federation, stopped agreeing to like pay for things like transport and the insurance for the players. And I believe that is going to change moving forward, where the IOC and the International Hockey Federation are now willing to cover some of those costs. So in a world where there's some sort of, you know, conglomerate that is willing to take on that financial risk of paying for the insurance for, you know, let's think of an example, Jake, pull it out of your butt, Sam Algadieri's, you know, UCL for Team Italy.
I was about to make a bad joke about that. Thank you. All the free healthcare at the Olympics. I was just swing on by, give me a free, you know, internal brace.
sent Keith Meister to the Olympic Village to do TJ's. Great article from our friend Steph Apstein about that over at Sports Illustrated. I recommend reading. Anyway. But yeah, the insurance question is important. And then another big question here is the non-participants, right? So Bryce Harper and Shohei Ohtani have said on the record, I would love to play. That's great. You know who doesn't care that Bryce Harper wants to play? Like
95% of the Kelenic team that's not making the team. Yeah.
Bingo. And Adam Duvall and, you know,
more
like
Braves outfielders. Come on.
Joey Ortiz, right? Doesn't care. Although he might be on the team. He's pretty freaking good, baby. Bryce Tarang. Like your everyday run-of-the-mill, upper middle class big leaguer who doesn't get to be in the Olympic team, they're like, okay, what does this do for me? Like, I'm happy that you, Bryce Harper, and Jose Ramirez are going to get to go over there and carry a flag and wave and whatever.
Right.
But like that doesn't change my life.
In the NBA, you know, Jaden McDaniels or whatever is just hanging out at home on vacation, right? He's not missing out on anything.
It's not that he's not missing out on anything. He doesn't have to change the rhythm of his life.
Exactly. Whereas the big leaguers that are not playing, which is most of them, you're either telling them, hey, you are just not going to play for a couple of weeks, or your best player is going to leave for a couple of weeks. And that's also unfortunate.
MLB games overlapping with Olympic baseball competition is not going to happen. That feels incredibly unrealistic to me. The playing field would not be level. Teams would not go for that. Owners would not go for that. People wouldn't give a crap. Like, who's watching Phillies Braves if Acuna and Harper are both in LA, right? It doesn't carry the same heft. MLB's not going to go up against it. The way that this works, and we'll take a break in a second. The way that this works is to have it happen over the All-Star break, okay? The opening ceremonies in LA are already on the docket for July 14th. That is a Friday. The All-Star game would be that Tuesday, likely, July 11th. You just push the All-Star game back a week. You do a longer All-Star break, probably about 8 to 10 days, and you squeeze a tournament in there within that time. You have big rosters so that pitchers aren't worried, so that guys can throw three or four innings, whatever, if you need to. You do two double elimination style brackets. The winner of each of those brackets faces off in a three-game final, and that's how you do it. Although maybe a three-game final is hard with the bronze medal. Bronze medal always ruining everything.
Well, again, if you compare it to like the WBC, and I want to kind of finish with a point on that, you know, they played, right? It depends how much you're going to do pool play, how many teams are going to be in it, if it's just going to be single elimination knockout. You could do it, I think, in 8 or 9 days. I mean, it would be obviously college tournaments do this stuff all the time. You know, it's a little bit messier. And obviously, you're probably increasing risk depending on how many pitchers you're sending and all that stuff. But I do think that there would be a way to do it. And I think in terms of not totally messing up the season, because again, even more than the fear of the owners of, oh, I'm letting my player that I'm paying a lot of money play for a team that isn't mine, the thing that is really going to be difficult is, hey, we're going to play 150 games. You know, that is the thing that owners probably want to hear even less. And so because of that, the easiest way to do it is to expand the All-Star break and then probably add, you know, either start this season a week earlier or end it a week later, because anything more than that, and you're really getting into a really crunchy situation where there's just fewer and fewer off days. Now, granted, they could say, well, we're giving you the biggest All-Star break you've ever had. And for most of the league, I actually think there probably would be a lot of players that would be like, hell yeah, I get to go hang out with my family for 10 days in July. And I actually think that in a lot of ways, I think a lot of players who weren't doing that would be like, great, that's fine. Like, I'm not totally opposed to that.
Pitchers would like it less because they're more beholden to the rhythm, and they would need to find a catcher on vacation to throw to. But you make that kind of thing work if you need to.
Yeah.
The concern that I have is actually with the All-Star game.
Mm.
So do you do it? Do you do the All-Star game on July 11th?
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's say you don't.
Right.
Fox is expecting a game. They have already paid for that game, I believe.
Right. I can't say that for sure, but I would assume, just because of that's how those rights work, but sure.
For some reason, the All-Star game does numbies. And that's baked into the deal.
And so remember, MLB
would need to then like find a way to buy out Fox from not doing an All-Star game. Or the other option is you do the All-Star game on July 11th. You do it in LA. You keep the players there. You start the baseball Olympic tournament early before the opening ceremonies, which a number of other sports do. Hell yeah. And you have games on the 12th, the 13th, the 14th. And then you kind of can end the Olympic baseball tournament about halfway through the Olympics, and then you resume the season.
Wild idea. You basically turn the All-Star game into like a tryout to make Team USA and all the other teams.
Amazing.
Anyway, that's ridiculous. I will say, though, this is why we have to start talking about this, because we know that the All-Star game next year is in Atlanta, and we know that the All-Star game in 2026 is in Philadelphia. We will know in the next year, probably less than a year, where the All-Star game is in 2027. And so, like, they ain't going to announce an All-Star game in 2028 and then be like, oh, just kidding, we're not doing it. Like, that is going to be something that is likely going to have to be figured out because of the timing. And so that is also something impacting one very specific city that wants an All-Star game, right? Whether it's, I mean, whatever, we're going to go through all the cities that want All-Star games, but like that is that, whereas, you know, all this other stuff is impacting every team. You know, it's not, if you're just delaying and not giving someone an All-Star game, the point you make about Fox is totally spot on, but that's another thing to consider. I think that there is probably a way to do it without doing an All-Star game, because in a way you would do that. And remember, for Manfred, who's already said he's retiring in 2029, this is an opportunity in a way that he's obviously already changed the game in a lot of ways that he deserves plenty of criticism for a lot of things, has, I think, made baseball better. And I think a lot of the numbers show that in terms of attendance, in terms of fan interest, in terms of average age of fan. Like, I do genuinely believe that a lot of the rule changes have helped that. With all that said, like, I think that timing is also notable. I don't know if he specifically said, I'm going to retire in 2029 because he said, like, the Olympics will be my last venture. Maybe that is what he's thinking, maybe not. But that timing also kind of lines up for him as a commissioner to leave a very significant legacy in that sense, if he can, even if it is a one-off, to execute something like that. My last big point on this, and this isn't to like downgrade or say that this isn't something that should be thought about and you know, taken seriously, is that the WBC is awesome. And it's not that, it's obviously, there were players that we don't have there. The WBC is flawed and is challenging, just as this will likely be in some form flawed and challenging. And, you know, when we talk about baseball, we know, okay, it's never going to be like the World Cup, but that's another thing that is not that the Olympics, you know, soccer at the Olympics is whatever. It's not the best players and they're fine. They don't really care. Basketball, of course, we just watched it. We watched the best players in the best league all play against each other. And that's what we want to have. And like, man, 2023 was awesome. And like, we're going to have that. And like, that's an event that I think we should still believe in and care about and not act like we didn't just have something really close to what we're already talking about dreaming of in LA. Now, that doesn't mean it shouldn't be trying, but I guess I just don't want to lose sight of that. Like, we got a pretty good thing going that players remember how we felt after 2023. The way we were talking about it was, this is going to make people want to compete in the WWC in the WBC in 2026 even more, right? And so that's another thing that I'm also just bringing up is something that's fascinating as to how we talk about all of this leading up to the WBC, which is going to happen again in a few years, and how that relates to the Olympic conversation is something I'm fascinated by. So I just wanted to mention that.
The WBC means something now in part because of what the WBC has done over the last two decades. Mm-hmm. The Olympics doesn't need to have any explainer. That's, I think, why I'm a big advocate for this, mm-hmm. is the gold medal, the five rings, that crap speaks for itself.
And growing the game in that sense, I do think, not that the WBC isn't growing the game in its own way, yeah. but I do think having baseball be a part of, I 100%. And I'm not taking anything away from that. I'm just saying from the fan experience, it's like, man, we did get to watch a lot of the best players play against each other, right. and it was pretty cool.
The alternative, I'll finish with this. The alternative is very undesirable. Let's say MLB doesn't stop the season. There will probably be some sort of baseball, okay? We're going to have like a okay prospect team playing in front of 12,000 people at Dodger Stadium during the Olympics while like the Dodgers are on the road for 2 weeks and LA is like a gridlock. And like it just, the alternative is just embarrassing and it represents such an enormous missed opportunity for the entire
totally
sport.
Fair. I think that's totally fair. I think that is absolutely fair. But yeah, let us know what you guys think. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. We will take a quick break. And when we return, Pedro Grifol will not be managing the White Sox anymore. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
Hello. Welcome back. Baseball Barbercast. I'm Jake Mintz with my friend Jordan Schusterman. Pedro Grifol. He's not the manager of the White Sox anymore. This happened yesterday morning. You know, anytime you go out there and you lose 21 games in a row and then you win one and then you get fired, that's tough to swallow.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've just already been talking about this for weeks. So I think the big development, I mean, is just who is managing, right? Because when we talked about the reports and the concept of what does firing Pedro Grifol do at this point, I think the two things that we learned from this happening, I don't even really want to buy. I mean, you wrote about, okay, why does this happen? And clearly he was not.
I think that's worth just saying.
Okay, the, sure. Because I have two other main takeaways, but yeah.
Yeah. Some reporting has come out, like in part what I wrote yesterday. Just the extent to which Grifol was unpopular within the room and with the front office was sort of underrated. It was alluded to an extent, but this was not a situation where it was a likable manager scuffling through a bad season. That's been a thing many times before. Brandon Hyde in Baltimore oversaw some horrible teams and did a good job of keeping the vibes relatively high. That's not what Grifol was. He really lost the clubhouse. I asked someone in baseball about Grifol losing the clubhouse, and they responded, "Can't lose what you never had," right? And so maybe this is kicking a guy on his way out the door, but
sure.
The understanding I have is that this was not a good situation really at any point. And yes. for him to be fired now yes. is it really just happened because you can't lose 21 games in a row. And it is unfair to kind of burden the new guy with that type of streak. So they waited for a win to happen. They waited for an off day and they have gotten rid of Grifol, but not just Grifol.
Yes. And that is what is key. And that is the two things, because the reason why you do this now and you don't wait is one is kind of obvious, but I think it is worth saying, which Chris Getz said, is we need to start looking for who the next manager is going to be. And they said it is going to be from outside the organization. And that process, starting that process now and not on November 1st, or I guess October 1st, is worthwhile. And I think, and there's precedent for that. That is something that we see teams do.
He said outside the organization.
He did.
That, yeah. That's huge. You know what that means?
It is. It is. It is. And so to that point.
No, no. Do you understand what that means?
What does that mean?
It's not Tony La Russa.
Well,
he is yeah. okay. in the organization. He is an advisor for the White Sox.
Which that doesn't mean that Tony La Russa will not still be involved in picking someone from outside the organization.
Doesn't matter.
He probably will be. But yes. Okay, great. You're safe. You don't have to bike to Chicago again. Congratulations.
Exactly.
That said, that said, the thing that was significant about this too when we speculated earlier was, okay, sure, you don't want to, like, why are we, this is going to hand us to Charlie Montoya? What's the difference? What's the point of that? You know, and it seems like Chris Getz was like, yeah, no, that's true. What is the point of that? We are going to clear out several members of the staff, including Montoya, including a couple assistant coaches, and we are going to elevate one Grady Sizemore to be the interim manager. Now, I think this is an effect. No, Grady Sizemore. All right, who's Grady Sizemore? One of the great first six seasons of the 21st century, of the last 40 years. He was, he was one of the best players in baseball through his age 25 season. And then he was hurt all the time. He missed two full seasons. He completed, his career deteriorated very quickly. He had a pretty impressive comeback to even get back, considering how much time he missed, and played a couple seasons in 14 and 15. Obviously, was never anywhere close to what he was earlier in his career when he was just a power speed dynamo in Cleveland's outfield. But since he retired, again, his last season was at age 32, Grady Sizemore slowly, but honestly more recently, got into coaching and into the player development world. He originally worked for the Diamondbacks last season, I believe, where he was connected with one Josh Barfield. Josh Barfield, who was working with the Diamondbacks, hired, he's like, all right, sure, you can come intern for us. And everyone's, there's a headline going around, oh, he was a $15 an hour intern. It's like, okay, well, yeah, I mean, Grady Sizemore didn't need the money, but that's a nice headline. I mean, it's cool. Like, I'm glad he was obviously low down on the hierarchy there in the D-backs front office, but he wanted to get in, and Barfield was, I believe, a former teammate, and they got in with him. Now, that said, then Barfield gets hired by the White Sox as an assistant GM. He brings Sizemore over before the season as a major league coach. Now, this is something that is, like, quietly happening across the league, is there are a lot of former players that do not have official pitching coach or hitting coach or third base coach titles that are just hanging out in the dugout, or are either in the dugout every game or are traveling with the team all the time. There are a lot of teams that have guys like this. Now, this was an interesting one because it was Grady Sizemore on the White Sox, but Barfield was the connection. And it does seem that this last couple months of the season, they have identified Grady Sizemore as someone who, I don't think anyone is pretending, okay, he's going to be the manager of the White Sox, you know, for the next 20 years. But it is an opportunity where they see this is a guy that wants to manage. He has, you know, come in and helped us out. And it's someone that is enough of a change of pace and a departure, because him being in the dugout this year was really him learning how to be in a major league dugout in a coaching role more than, like, I'm making the call, right? He was basically shadowing. And so now, as opposed to just handing it to Charlie Montoya, who was very much part of the full staff, it's not the Sizemore was a part of the staff. It is something different. And I think that that is smart. And I think that it is a cool opportunity that is, again, there's literally no pressure on Grady Sizemore whatsoever. And I think if he wants to manage in the future, just getting to kind of feel the rhythms and just the processes of doing that is a cool thing. They also brought up Justin Jerschle, I believe, to be the one of the assistant coaches, or I don't know if he's a third base coach or bench coach, but that's a guy that we, right? This is Justin Jerschle, who we interviewed years ago in the minor leagues. That Jerschle family has been coaching for a while. This is a younger guy too. So some younger voices, some different voices. Obviously, this team is still going to be the worst in baseball, but I am encouraged to see that they're at least trying something that is a departure from the main staff.
Knocking off the entire Grifolian wing of the coaching staff is the right decision. If you just fire Grifol, it doesn't necessarily change the energy of the entire room. This feels like they're trying to do that. This is a step in the right direction. And the one thing I'll say about Sizemore, this is someone who can speak to a lot of different types of players. Right. Grady Sizemore was a star. He was also injured, and he was also a vet. He lived a lot of different baseball lives, drafted out of high school in the third round. He's experienced many things, and I think he can talk to a lot of different players. It's the rest of this season, all the White Sox are looking for is progress and development. Grifol was not creating a good atmosphere for that to happen. They are more hopeful Sizemore could be that person. We will wait and we will see.
But they're going to keep losing. And when, honestly, we probably won't talk about the White Sox again until they, you know, lose their 115th or 20th game. But it is good that we kind of moved on from that time.
I think they avoid that I think they don't have the worst record in baseball history. I think Sizemore throws on a uni, hops out there.
Right. He's got the boys cooking. One other piece of news that we wanted to get to was the report of a baseball game that will be happening next August between the Braves and the Reds at Bristol Motor Speedway.
Not in Connecticut. Not Bristol, Connecticut.
Not in Connecticut.
Bristol, Tennessee.
Yes, Bristol, Tennessee. This is fascinating. I think that I am excited for this just because, not that I have any sort of NASCAR affiliation or connection or passion, although I did kind of get into it during COVID because it was happening and it was on. We say this every time they do baseball in a new, different place. And while this isn't necessarily, you know, taking it to, you know, Prague, this is going to be a, like, oh, this is going to be different. This is a baseball game in a different setting. It will look different. And we are highly in favor of that at a very basic level. And I think it will certainly be catering to a very different kind of fan, but a fan that very much exists. And the Braves fans will certainly be enjoying this one. And I just hope we get some goofy dimensions. I really hope we get some goofy dimensions.
Three things. Baseball in any bizarre, new, outlandish location generally is a positive because it provides a new look and generates interest and breaks up the flow of 162. That's a good thing for me. It's like kind of another landmark tent pole within the season. That's one. Number two, going from Rickwood to this is a bit odd because it's like the emotion and the historical weight of an event like that into this is the most gimmicky version of the one-off that they have tried to do.
Right? The Field of Dreams is the most, you can't get more gimmicky than the Field of Dreams. And to be clear too, we don't
but the
know
field of if, dreams, but yeah. The Field of Dreams is like obvious in a way.
I know, but like still, you would still use the word gimmicky. I would still say that, to be clear, this is not replace. We don't know for if Rickwood is going to happen in the same form again. I understand what you're saying. I just want to make it clear that it's not like this is replacing that or is going to be. Yes. Yeah, so I just want to make sure that's clear.
And then the third thing is the reason why they're doing this, where they're doing this. That is because they are trying, and probably will, get the largest crowd ever for a Major League Baseball game. Bristol Motor Speedway hosts, I think, 150,000 people. Yep. The biggest attendance ever for a MLB game. Can you look it up? It was the 2008 game, Red Sox-Dodgers at the LA Coliseum. I want to say it was 110,000, 108,000 people.
115,000 in 2008. And that was that a regular season game or was it a
spring training exhibition game? It was like in between. Yeah. So they're going to try and beat that. That's why they're doing this in such a big venue.
Which they should.
They could say, which they should. Yeah. And they'll say it's the biggest, most attended game ever. And it'll be a wild atmosphere and it'll be a
fascinating thing. Which again is gimmicky, right? That's part of it. It's like we're just out here trying to set world records. But like, that's fine. You know, you want to pack a bunch, you want to pack 150,000 people into Bristol, Tennessee to watch Ellie De La Cruz? Yeah, that's cool. Like, I don't care about NASCAR and I think that's pretty cool. I'm not really overthinking this one. I also, like, we get to ask Ellie about NASCAR. Like,
Ellie's going to race. I don't know who's still driving those cars, but Ellie racing Dale Martin around the track.
Oh, yeah. No, there's
boogity, 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 boys. Let's go play baseball.
So, yeah, this will be fascinating. I think we've speculated about this. Like, when we've talked about, like, okay, what is actually the next thing? It's also a reminder that the Little League Classic is happening again. Our favorite
Yankees.
One. The Yankees, first time the Yankees have been a part of the Little League Classic. Little League World Series starts next week. Quick shout out to the Venezuelan Little League team. I was going to do this for my good, but I'm just doing it now. And then we'll read the email that you wanted to show me for the last week. The Venezuelan team ran through the Latin American qualifiers with a combined score of 87-0. So I'm excited for the Team Venezuela to get to go hang out with Gleyber Torres and the New York Yankees. I guess a week from Sunday will be the Little League Classic in Williamsport, one of our favorite events of the year. Anyway, put
Jordan,
baseball
you
in more weird places. I support it.
You don't want Gleyber Torres around a bunch of young ball players. They're not going to run hard to first base. Come on.
No.
Is that a good example?
I think they'll be playing. Now, I also have a feeling that those players will all still just be more excited to see Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge with the tiny little leaguers. Looking forward to it.
That'll be great.
Jake.
Aaron Judge with the big little leaguers, even funnier.
You told me that we got an email earlier this week, and obviously we both have access to the email, but we got one with the subject line, "My Bachelor Party," starring Nolan Gorman. And I have not read this email yet, but you were like, "Don't read this. We're going to read this on the podcast. It's amazing." So this is
May
from
I?
Zev, and yeah, please take it away. I'm not even going to open it. I'll just let you read. So take it away.
"Hi, Jake and Jordan. First time, long time. Love the podcast. Must admit that I miss producer Chris dearly." Shouts out to producer Chris.
I talked to Chris on the phone the other day. I also miss Chris, and Chris is doing awesome.
He's doing great.
Chris.
Yeah. "I am also a Mariners fan from the DMV and a CES JDS alumni, Lions 2008. I am emailing."
Shouts out Jonathan Cannon.
Shouts out Jonathan Cannon. Also got an email about that. "Shouts out Jonathan Cannon. I am emailing because Jake's bachelor party took me back to my own beach and baseball bachelor party in 2019. I share this story with you in the hopes that you will, one, think it's hilarious and absurd, and two, perhaps have the connections to put me in touch with Nolan Gorman for a long-awaited meeting. The story begins on a drunken Saturday afternoon at the National Spring Training Park. I was sitting along the first baseline with a few of my friends while another group of buddies had gone to the outfield grass. We were heckling and making friends in the stands when a crack off the bat headed towards my friends in the outfield. We jumped up in disbelief and watched as my friends scrambled to catch the home run ball as it ricocheted off the scoreboard. My friend Aaron, maybe our own, ended up with the ball and hoisted it in the air. After collectively freaking out, my friends presented me with the ball, now signed by all my friends and emblazoned with, quote, 'Zev's Bachelor Party, March 16th, 2019. As a baseball junkie and autograph collector, this was a perfect gift and memento. A few minutes later, things got weird. We were approached by fans asking if we caught the ball of highly touted prospect Nolan Gorman. None of us knew who Nolan was, but we began furiously Googling. The two older men walked over and introduced themselves as Nolan's father and grandfather. They told us it was the first homer that Nolan had ever hit as a pro, and they would be happy to purchase it from us. We decided to elect the most sober among us to handle negotiations and break the news to Nolan's family that the ball had already been defaced. Luckily, they were good sports and still wanted to buy the ball. We agreed on $200 cash and a signed ball from Nolan. That evening, we got a text from Nolan's father with a smiling Nolan holding a new autographed ball destined for my collection. Nolan even added 'Zev's Bachelor Party, March 16th to the new ball he gave me. Ever since, my friends and I have followed Nolan's career closely. Now that he's an everyday major leaguer, it's been my dream to one day introduce him to Zev of 'Zev's Bachelor Party. Maybe I'll see him at Nats Park later this season. Let me know your thoughts and advice on handle a meeting.' Incredible. All the best, Zev." There is a picture of Nolan Gorman with the ball. Okay. So just, again, the first home run ball Nolan Gorman ever hit as a pro has Zev's Bachelor Party March 16th, 2019 on it in his collection. Like, Nolan Gorman has that ball at home.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
So this must have been, because he was drafted out of high school in 2018. So this was his first spring training. Basically, you know, he played it after he got drafted in like A-ball, but this is his first spring training. And obviously, if he hit a homer in a major league spring training game, you know, that's the first main one. That is so funny. I love this story. We should absolutely do what we can to connect these people. We can follow up about that off the air. We do not know Nolan Gorman personally, but we will certainly do our best to do something about this. So
incredible.
We will be in touch on that. But that is amazing. That is a just A+ email. Thank you, Zev, for sharing. Quick break, and we'll return. We'll do a speedy edition of The Good, The Bad, and The Ugla to finish off this Friday episode of Baseball Barbecast. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Good, bad, ugla. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing Dan ugla. Kind of odd, kind of different, kind of weird. I'll begin. Bobby Witt Jr. We got an email about how we kind of overlooked Bobby Witt Jr.'s bona fides when discussing the AL MVP conversation. And I think that that is legitimate. Bobby Witt Jr. is on pace to have 30 home runs, 30 steals, and hit over 340. Three players have ever done that in the expansion era. So since 1961. Two of them played in Coors. And when it comes to batting average at Coors Field, doesn't really count. Larry Walker, Ellis Burks, great seasons. I feel pretty confident that if they were in a different stadium, they would hit under 340. The only non-Coorsian player to go 30-30, hit over 340 was Mookie Betts in 2018, who won the MVP award that year. Okay. Bobby Witt Jr. could do that. In fact, I think he will. Since the All-Star break, Jordan, he has a 1362 OPS. He is on absolute fire. The home run he hit, I think it was on Wednesday night against the Red Sox, to dead center was ludicrous. Comical power. Something that people don't do. If he was playing in any other park, he would have more home runs than playing in Kauffman. It's true. I looked it up.
Yeah, no, it's 20, true.
If he had been playing every single game in Cincinnati, which, again, is not how it works. You don't play all 162 in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati's different. I'm just using it as an example. He would have 35 homers, and we would be talking about him very differently. Very differently. If he had 35 homers and everything else about his season was the same, I think the conversation about him and Judge would be closer. That being said, quick word on Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge's OPS plus right now is a 217. 217. Now, OPS plus, right, 100 is average. And the thing that we like in about OPS plus is it takes into account park factors, shouts out Bobby Witt Jr., and two, the era that you're playing in. How offensive is it? How defensive is it? And right now in this season, it's been a very pitcher-friendly time to play baseball. So if you look at guys with an OP, I know his like raw OPS maybe isn't generational. The OPS pluses, okay? Here are the expansion era players to finish a full season with a 200 OPS plus. Bonds, 01 to 04. All 4 years. Four good highest player. OPS pluses. Good player. Won the MVP all 4 years. Judge right now is in fifth if the season ended today. Who will he win the MVP? I think yes. McGuire, 98, did win the MVP because Sosa won it in 98, also on this list. Frank Thomas, 94. Bagwell, 94. Not totally full seasons, but still. Both won the MVP. Judge at 22, over 200 OPS plus, won the MVP. McCovey, 69, won the MVP. Bonds, 92, 93, won the MVP. George Brett, 1980, won the MVP. Mickey Mantle, 1961, did not win the MVP. There's a reason for that. Norm Cash, underrated freaking monster, also 1961, did not win the MVP. My point is, if Aaron Judge finishes with an OPS over 200, it's very difficult to envision him not winning the MVP. It's not Bobby Witt Jr.'s fault. He deserves to be in the conversation, deserves to be a debate. Not even close to Aaron Judge right now, in my opinion.
I think he is close, but I still agree with you. I mean, we already had this conversation earlier this week, so I agree. Bobby Witt Jr. is hitting 409 at home. It is my good this week is Ketel Marte, and no, his numbers are not quite as good as Bobby Witt Jr., but I do think off the awards conversation we said earlier, I should not have dismissed him that quickly as a MVP finalist. The Diamondbacks have been outstanding. What Ketel Marte did in 2019, I was like, this dude is just had a career year and the ball was juiced. He had 32 home runs. He finished fourth in MVP that year. This year, he already has 29 home runs. And he, I believe, he's basically walking more than he was in 2019 by like three full percentage points. And he, right-handed, especially as a switch hitter, I tweeted the stat out. It is shocking. Since 2018, he has the highest OPS against left-handed pitching, second highest in baseball behind only Aaron Judge, Ketel Marte. So that is, when people talk about like, oh, Ozzy Albies, when he hits right-handed, he's 10 times better than he is left-handed. But Marte is also awesome left-handed. He is just sensational. His OPS plus is 155 right now, and he's amazing. I thought it wouldn't get any better than 2019, and he is clearly better than 2019, and the ball is very much not juiced. So I'm so impressed with him. And yeah, Ketel Marte is very, 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 very good. What's bad?
The Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves right now, for the first time, it feels like in 85 years since, you know, like Charlie Culberson is playing every day, are not in possession of a playoff spot. They lost yesterday and the Mets won, which means Atlanta is a half game back behind the Mets for the third NL wildcard spot. San Diego and Arizona have the first two. It is the lowest the Braves postseason odds have been since June 1st, 2022. They're around 66%. I still think they will make the playoffs. It's just worth trying to understand what's going on here. Like, they've been playing 500. They are 500 team since April 17th. They got really hot to start the year.
Not good offense. Not good offense.
Injuries are part of this. Strider out all year. Acuna since late May. Ozzy's been out since July. Late July. Sean Murphy missed 2 months and just hasn't been good. Michael Harris out since mid-June. Austin Riley missed some time and was bad because he was playing through it. The pitching has kept them in it. Still, Charlie Morton has a 5.27 since mid-May. Reynaldo Lopez is on the IL, is out for at least another week and change. Spencer Schwellenbach has been amazing, but they're going to limit his innings. Understandable. Max Fried has missed some time and looked bad in his last start. Chris Sale is going to win the Cy Young, so that's cool.
And yeah, more on that in a second.
Yep. More on that in a second. But this offense has just kind of been meh. And the Braves are in they're in a spot of bother, Jordan, I would say. They're in a spot of bother. Yeah. Not great. Also, seeing William Contreras kick their ass this week, Braves lost that trade, right? Like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can make the argument that Contreras wouldn't have developed into this without everyday playing time, which he was not going to get in Atlanta. Still.
But like they had him. They could have decided that he was going to be the guy and just given him the keys, and they didn't. They didn't want to do that.
And now we have a situation where he's just straight up better than Sean Murphy already.
Yeah. Honestly, possibly like significantly so if Murphy does not really start getting back to what he looked like last year. That said, my bad is going to make Braves fans a little bit better. I really don't like just being like dunking on bad or like young players who are struggling. And so I don't want to doom Vaughn Grissom to never being a good major leaguer. However, this is like a pretty stunning spot that we are in here. This was a very interesting trade when Vaughn Grissom was traded straight up for Chris Sale. It was like, oh, okay, Red Sox are getting out from the contract. They're going with their younger pitchers, and they're getting a young hitter that we've seen succeed. And in a one-for-one deal, which we don't see very often, right? We've talked about at the deadline how normally when you're trading major leaguers, established major leaguers, in not necessarily a rebuild status, and that's what made that trade so interesting, is two teams that in theory were trying to be good, but you are investing in one player. You are making a bet and saying, okay, even if we don't believe in Chris Sale anymore, which that alone obviously proved to be an incorrect calculation, but we believe that Vaughn Grissom can be a foundational piece. And I mean, I know injuries have contributed to this too, but he's back healthy now and they just optioned him to AAA and there's no room for him in the big leagues at all. But I don't know what the path is for him becoming a real part of this team. When you look at the other infielders they have coming up, you look at the picture of their infield, you look at Trevor Story, who in theory will come back at some point. I just don't know what this looks like. And even if Chris Sale was pitching average, this would be looking like a really tough evaluation. And it was already a very small sample and resume for Vaughn Grissom that made me a little bit concerned about like what they were really getting. I hope he can get it done. He's 23. I'm just worried now that I don't really see how he's going to get that opportunity to even prove it in Boston. And that's what is bad and concerning about the future of evaluating this trade, regardless of the fact that it doesn't look like he's going to contribute again this year and Chris Sale might win the Cy Young. That in and of itself is going to be tough to swallow for Boston. But I'm a little bit worried about where this goes from here for Grissom.
There was a world you could envision where Sale just is never good again and hurt and old and Grissom becomes like an everyday guy.
Yeah.
But we are not living in that.
No.
The timeline. What is Ugla, Jordan? Why don't you go?
My Ugla is Nolan Chanuel. I've done this exact same Ugla before, but he continues to just mystify me. This man still has the lowest maximum exit velocity of any hitter in the big leagues. Still, all the way. He's been playing every day since the start of the year. And after he hit a home run in Yankee Stadium and has been playing awesome lately, these young Angels players, Neto's been fantastic. Ohapi's been great all season. Good times in Anaheim. Truly, like these, and Sean Newell's been great. And I watched him crush that homer in Yankee Stadium. I'm like, man, he really got that. It's like 103.3 off the bat. Like, still not. Like, I'm just like, this is unbelievable. Like, he is completely defying what we think is possible for an offensive profile, where he's just like doing some sort of Stephen Kwan impression as like a first baseman. And I just, it's so weird and it's so ugly. And I hope that he can continue to do it. And if he does, he will be very much in his own category in every sense. So Nolan Chanuel, you are very weird. And but as long as you're doing well, God bless.
My Ugla is the Rangers went to the White House. Mm. Teams going to the White House, always funny for a lot of reasons. The suits.
Timing also.
The timing's also always great. Now, some people are like, why are they going now? They won 11 months ago. Biden to sleep? It's like, well, they usually do it when the team comes and plays DC or some East Coast team. That's how it goes on an off day. I don't think the Rangers were set to go to the Nats this year.
No, they're right? playing. No.
So I think they went there. Now they're coming up to New York for the weekend. They're playing the Yankees. But they went to the White House yesterday, and it's always funny to see who goes, who doesn't go, and why. It appears that upset of the year, all the Rangers went.
Oh, yeah.
As far as I can tell, the only one who was not there was Jacob DeGrom, who, is it fair to call him a 2023 World Series champion? Yes, it is, kind of.
However,
he had to throw a bullpen. He had to throw a bullpen that day, so he didn't go. That's
Couldn't
what he
do
said.
It on the lawn? Couldn't do it on the lawn?
Great point. Front. Let DeGrom throw his bullpen on the White House lawn. But if DeGrom's excuses can't make the White House because I have to play baseball, everyone's fine with that. I don't care what your political opinions are. Need Jacob DeGrom getting his work in. But there's just, these lead to so many funny moments. Forgot about Evan Carter existing at all.
Well, looked he nice was there in his bar mitzvah suit.
Very good. Too many sneakers with shoes, or shoes, sneakers with suits. We're going to the White House. Okay.
Oh, wow. Jake House. with the decorum sick burn. Damn.
Sorry.
All right.
Like, if we're going to, we're going to the White House. Like, let's throw some leather on, you know? Here's my take on this. If we're not wearing leather shoes, dress shoes to the White House, where are we wearing them?
No, that's fair. I think that's okay.
And then I went and dug into some past photos of teams going to the White House just for fun. Yeah,
they're always hilarious.
Kenley Jansen wore a tuxedo in 2021.
Is that overdoing it? Is that overdoing it?
Yeah.
Hold on. You're like, hey, no sneakers. Well, tuxedo. Are you crazy?
That's not what the tuxedo's for. I'm not taking sartorial advice.
Are you more offended? Well, no, I'm not saying you should, but I am just clarifying. Would you rather they be underdressed or overdressed?
I'm not offended. I'm just pointing out.
Are you more okay with the tuxedo or the sneakers?
I think the tuxedo is more funny.
I agree with that.
I think this, to me, it's not even like they're, I'm sure they're nice, expensive $700 blank white sneakers that Corey Seager was wearing.
You know who wouldn't wear sneakers to the White House? Paul Skeens.
Yeah, he'd wear his military uniform.
I mean, he wears his best suit to pitch against, you know, the Rays.
Suited. He is suited up at all times. The last thing I want to mention about this. Oh, one more. Adolis in a suit.
That was weird. That's my favorite part. It's like there are a good number of players that you just have literally never seen wearing and, you know, menswear like this. Doesn't exist.
It's great. So the Rangers tweet out a video, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's all the guys walking in. And someone replies, how about we practice instead of wasting time going to the White House? How about we practice? That is the funniest thing I have ever freaking heard.
One of the funniest tweets of the season. Yeah.
One of the funniest tweets I've ever seen. How about we practice instead of wasting time going to the White House? Every team goes to the White House, basically. I think every baseball team does. Some other teams have opted out in other sports. But the idea that the Rangers would like reply to an email from, you know, Joe Biden's schedule maker and say, I can't make it. We got to do BP. We got to go
practice. Yeah, we just got our ass kicked by Houston. We got to go take some extra ground balls.
Baseball teams don't do practices. They don't practice.
Certainly
no practice.
Not on off day. Well, they do practice every day before the game, but never, ever. I guess they do like in the postseason. Workout day, off day, postseason. That's the thing.
That's a practice.
Regular season, non-existent. No practice. It's never happened. I actually would love to know if there's basically any precedent for that. Because off days are so precious for major league teams that like that is outrageous.
There were probably some Rangers players that were pissed about having to go on an off day.
Right, right. But it's not like it's because they wanted to be taking extra swings.
Yeah. Hilarious tweet. Great job. Raise my glass. Good all right. Job, that's everybody. The show.
We're done. We're
too
done.
Long, but we
thank
had a good time.
You all. It was a great show. I am off to Toronto, Canada tomorrow for a first year anniversary trip with my lovely wife. That's why I'm wearing a Blue Jays hat. If Joey Votto gets activated by the Blue Jays in the next 12 hours, maybe I will see him have his Toronto homecoming. If not, I'll just watch the Blue Jays and the A's and have a good time. But until
A's
Monday,
bang.
A's bang. Until Monday, where I will be recording from across the border.
They let the A's and all that firepower across the border?
They're checking Lawrence Butler's car. They're saying, what do they say? What is your
what purpose? What is the purpose of your visit?
What is the purpose of your visit? Lawrence Butler
dropping
is
tanks.
I am going yard multiple times. And the board of security is like, yo, Lawrence Butler, you're on my fantasy team. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, especially if you caught someone's first pro home run and then signed it before you could give it to their parents. Let us know, and we will be back next week. Thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Goodbye.